Chapter 5. In one of the mural-walled suites of the Nile Hilton, Dr. Frank Hopper listened attentively from a leather sofa. Seated in a nearby matching chair on the opposite side of a coffee table, Ismail Yerli puffed pensively on a meerschaum pipe whose bowl was carved in the likeness of the head of a turbaned sultan. Even with the universal sounds of the busy Cairo traffic seeping in through the closed windows to the balcony, Eva could not bring herself to accept the nightmare of her brush with death on the beach. Already her subconscious was blurring the memory. But Dr. Hopper's voice pulled her thoughts back to the here and now of the conference room. "There is no doubt in your mind these men tried to kill you?"
"None," Eva answered.
"You describe them as looking like black Africans," said Ismail Yerli. Eva shook her head.
"I didn't say black, only that their skin was dark. Their facial features were more sharp, more defined, like a cross between an Arab and an East Indian. The one who burned my car wore a loose-fitting tunic and a thick, intricately wrapped headdress. All I could see were his ebony eyes and a nose shaped like an eagle."
"The headdress, was it cotton and swathed about the head and chin several times?" asked Yerli.
Eva nodded. "The cloth seemed enormously long."
"What color was it?"
"A deep, almost ink blue."
"Indigo?"
"Yes," replied Eva. "Indigo sounds about right."
Ismail Yerli sat in silent contemplation for a few moments. He was the coordinator and logistics expert for the World Health Organization team. Lean and stringy, immensely efficient, and with an almost pathological love of detail, he was a smart operator with an abundance of political savvy. His home was in the Mediterranean seaport of Antalya, Turkey. He claimed Kurdish blood, having been born and raised in the Asia Minor hinterland of Cappadocia. A lukewarm Muslim, he had not been inside a mosque in years. Like most Turks, he had a massive thicket of coarse black hair, complemented by bushy eyebrows that met over the nose and were supplemented by a huge mustache. He displayed a humorous disposition that never quit. His mouth was always stretched in a smile that was a decoy for an extremely serious temperament.
"Tuaregs," he said finally.
He spoke so softly that Hopper had to lean closer.
"Who?" he questioned.
Yerli looked across the coffee table at the Canadian leader of the medical team. A quiet man, Hopper said little but listened long. He was, the Turk mused, the complete opposite of himself. Hopper was big, humorous, red-faced, and heavily bearded. All he needed to look like the Viking, Eric the Red, was a battle axe and a conical helmet sunk on his head with horns curving from it. Resourceful, precise, and laid back, he was regarded by international contamination scientists as one of the two finest toxicologists in the world.
"Tuaregs," Yerli repeated.
"Once the mighty nomadic warriors of the desert, who won great battles against French and Moorish armies. And perhaps the greatest of all the romantic bandits. They raid no more. Today they raise goats and beg in the cities bordering the Sahara to survive. Unlike Arab Muslims, the men wear the veil, a cloth that when unwrapped measures over a meter in length."
"But why would a tribe of desert nomads want to do away with Eva?" asked Hopper to no one in particular. "I fail to see a motive."
Yerli shook his head vaguely. "It would seem that one of them, at least, does not want her, and, we have to heavily weigh this possibility, the rest of the health teams investigating the outbreaks of toxic poisoning in the southwestern desert."
"At this point of the project," said Hopper, "we don't even know if contamination is the culprit. The mystery malady could be viral or bacterial."
Eva nodded.
"That's what Pitt suggested."
"Who?" Hopper asked for the second time.
"Dirk Pitt, the man who saved my life. He said somebody doesn't want me in Africa. He also thought you and the others might be on a hit list, too."
Yerli threw up his hands. "Incredible! The man thinks we're dealing with the Sicilian Mafia."
"Most fortunate he was nearby," said Hopper.
Yerli exhaled a blue cloud from his meerschaum and stared at the smoke thoughtfully. "More like opportune, considering the only other body on miles of shoreline had the courage to face a trio of assassins. Almost a miracle. Or," he stretched out the pause,
a preconceived presence. Eva's eyes widened in skepticism. If you're thinking it was a setup, Ismail, you can forget it.
Maybe he staged the act to frighten you back to the States.
I saw him kill 3 men with my own eyes. Believe you me, there was nothing staged about it.
Have you heard from him since he dropped you off at the hotel? Queried Hopper.
Only a message at the front desk asking me to have dinner with him this evening.
And you still think he was just a passing good Samaritan? Yearly persisted.
Eva ignored him and looked at Hopper. Pitt told me he was in Egypt for an archaeological survey of the Nile River for the National Underwater and Marine Agency. I have little reason to doubt him.
Hopper turned to Yearly. That should be easy enough to check out.
Yearly nodded.
I'll call a friend who's a marine biologist with NUMA.
The question is still why, muttered Hopper almost absently.
Yearly shrugged. If Eva's attempted murder was a conspiracy, it may well have been part of a plot to instill fear and force us to cancel our mission.
Yes, but we have 5 separate research teams of 6 members each heading for the southern desert. They'll be spread across 5 nations from Sudan to Mauritania. No one forced us on them. Their governments asked the United Nations for help in finding an answer to the strange sickness sweeping their lands. We are invited guests, certainly not unwanted enemies.
Yearly stared at Hopper. You're forgetting, Frank. There was one government who wanted no part of us.
Hopper nodded grimly.
You're right. I overlooked President Tahir of Mali. He was very reluctant to allow us inside his borders.
More likely General Kazim, said Yearly. Tahir is a puppet head of state. Zateb Kazim is the true power behind the Malian government.
What's he got against harmless biologists trying to save lives? Asked Eva.
Yearly turned up his palms.
We may never know.
It does seem a timely coincidence, said Hopper softly, that people, especially Europeans, have been vanishing with some regularity in the great emptiness of northern Mali during the past year.
Like the tourist safari that's making the headlines, said Eva.
Their whereabouts and fate are still a mystery, added Yearly quietly.
I can't believe there's a connection between that tragedy and Eva's attack, said Hopper.
But if we assume that General Kazim is the villain in Eva's case, it would stand to reason his spies ferreted out the fact that she was a member of the Malian Biological Studies team. With that knowledge in hand, he ordered her assassination as a warning for the rest of us to stay clear of his camel park.
Eva laughed. With your fertile imagination, Ismail, you'd make a great Hollywood screenwriter.
Yearly's thick eyebrows pinched together.
I think we should play safe and keep the Mali team in Cairo until this matter can be fully investigated and resolved.
You're overreacting, Hopper said to Yearly. How do you vote, Eva? Cancel the mission or go?
I'll risk it, said Eva, but I can't speak for the other team members.
Hopper stared at the floor, nodding his head. Then we'll ask for volunteers. I won't cancel the Mali mission, not with hundreds, maybe thousands of people dying out there from something nobody can explain. I'll lead the team myself.
No, Frank, snapped Eva. What if the worst happens? You're too valuable to lose.
It's our duty to report this affair to the police before you run off half-cocked, Yearly persisted.
Get serious, Ismail, said Hopper impatiently. Go to the local police and they're liable to hold us up and delay the entire mission. We could be bound in red tape for a month. I'll not walk into the clutches of Middle East bureaucracy.
My contacts can cut the red tape, pleaded Yearly.
No, Hopper said adamantly. I want all teams on board our chartered aircraft and in the air toward their designated locations as scheduled.
Then we're on for tomorrow morning, said Eva.
Hopper nodded. No hang-ups, no rain checks. We're going to put our show on the road first thing in the morning.
You're needlessly endangering lives, murmured Yearly.
Not if I take out insurance.
Yearly looked at Hopper, not comprehending.
Insurance?
Actually a press conference. Before we leave, I'll call in every foreign correspondent and news service in Cairo and explain our project with special emphasis on Mali. Of course, I'll make mention of the potential dangers involved. Then, in light of the international publicity surrounding our presence in his country, General Kazim will think twice before threatening the lives of scientists on a well-publicized mission of mercy.
Yearly sighed heavily.
For your sakes, I hope so. I truly hope so. Eva came over and sat down by the Turk. It will be all right, she insisted quietly. No harm will come to us. Nothing I can say will talk you out of it. You must go, then? There are thousands who might die if we don't, said Hopper firmly. Yerli stared sadly at them, then bowed his head in silent acceptance, his face suddenly pale. Then may Allah protect you, because if he doesn't, you will surely die.